From Noble Robot on East Hennepin Avenue in On Time, This Time, Minneapolis, this is Nice Games Club, the show where nice game devs talk games and game development.
I'm Ellen Burns Johnson, and I make nice games.
I'm Steve McGregor, and I make nice games.
And I'm Arthur Croy. I, too, make nice games. For this special Nicest of 2023 episode, we review a list of the nicest games we've played over the last year and go over what we're looking forward to playing and working on in 2024. And so, if everyone's ready, let's start. Okay, before we get into any of that.
Yep.
Now, listeners will be hearing this episode on or about Christmas time.
Oh, yeah.
And so what that means is they've seen all the Doctor Who 60th anniversary specials already.
Oh, yeah. That's
we, here in the past, have only seen the first one.
Yes. Oh, it was really good, though.
Donna Noble is back.
Noble is back.
The best companion. No arguments.
Yes.
I'm pretty pleased.
Absolutely,
about it.
Absolutely.
It's so funny because the showrunner, Russell T. Davies, is back, too. And the thing is, it's like... You if you didn't tell someone that was the fact, they could have guessed it.
Yeah,
because the tone is like immediately like, oh, I remember that. That's a 2008 Doctor Who episode.
Yeah.
So you know, it comes with all of the little quirks and, mm-hmm. and flaws of his style.
Yeah.
But also the show is like acknowledging its history in between
mm-hmm.
and is moving forward and it's really clever and funny and you know it's like the show is like a madhouse. It's like there was a time in between the last. Years, a couple of years where the show is trying to find an identity as a, like a more serious science fiction program.
Yeah.
Either through like grandiose myth making or through more recently years, more like grounded drama.
Yeah.
Which I liked quite a lot the last couple of years. I think that the fans were really mixed, but I think they just didn't appreciate it as like as a drama that was also science fiction and more instead of a science fiction that was also dramatic.
Sure.
And but now with this back, like, oh, it's like it's very nostalgic for lots of reasons. Like I said, this might be before or after Christmas. I should have checked calendar math. Mm. But the newest Doctor will premiere in the Christmas episode. That's really exciting too.
That's exciting.
So I don't know.
Looking forward to that.
What did you think of the? We watched it together.
It was very fun. I really liked it a lot. And yeah, it definitely did feel like it was the I guess like one of the first seasons of Doctor Who that I had seen.
Yeah,
so that was kind of neat. And yeah, Donna Noble's back, thank goodness. Because yeah, she is the best companion. I do agree with that. It had a fun like it. I liked the way that they tied up a lot of the narrative things because there's a reason why Donna Noble was not, you know, in future episodes.
Yeah,
and they explain why that she's back.
There's many ways they could have done it, and mm-hmm. the way they did it was clever, both from a plot perspective, but also from like. A sort of character theme concept. It was really, really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And it tied into her family, which is one of the things that Russell T. Davies was really great about.
Yeah.
And I become a huge fan of him as a writer. Mm. And what's funny is none of his other shows are as corny or goofy as Doctor Who.
Really?
They are like really, I mean, they're funny, but they are some of the most like real like drama you've ever watched.
Okay.
Two series, he writes these mini-series, basically,
sort of
British drama, six-episode, one-season kind of thing. The two I'll recommend are Cucumber, which is 2015, and It's a Sin, which was on HBO. It was a huge, huge hit.
Oh.
That was in 2019 or 20, it was recent, 2021 maybe.
Yeah.
And those are just astounding, heartbreaking works of drama and incredible. And what he brings to Doctor Who from that.
Yeah.
Is this thing where you meet somebody and 2 minutes later you really care what happens to them?
Yeah,
all of the side characters in a Doctor Who episode that he writes or you know or as he's run them that show are just legions of like bit roles played by you know interesting people who you care so much about immediately and so. When the companion's family gets involved and you see a lot more of them,
mm-hmm.
like it becomes you really, really care about them.
Yeah,
and we meet Donna's husband, who we saw briefly at the end in her last episode, but didn't really get to meet, and her daughter, a new character, as well as her mother, and we'll see Wilf again.
Yeah,
in a future one, folks listening will have already seen him. But the two new members of the Noble household, like. Slot right in perfectly, fits so well. It feels like they've been around for a long time in a way when you already knew Donna's family, the dynamic.
Yeah.
And so just excellent dramatic writing in this goofy, goofy world that does not stop for a second or rather stops every second to remind you how goofy it is.
Yeah.
And I like that about it as well.
It's fun.
It's a really weird balance, and no other writer on the planet does it that way. It's absolutely wild.
Yeah.
So I just want to take a bit of time, because I talk about Star Trek all the time, so I thought I'd mix it up a bit.
I appreciate it. I like Doctor. Well, but the character is I don't like Star Trek, but I watched Doctor Who before I knew you. So.
So you have your own opinions.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, got it.
You haven't been forced into liking it.
Right, yeah.
Right. So your loyalty to Donna Noble comes by earnestly.
Yes, it does. That's good. Ellen, you're still in Duluth, I hear.
I moved here, so that's likely to continue.
We're just going to check in every week to be sure.
Yeah. I'm hoping after the turn of the year to make kind of more regular trips down to the cities, but we're still, you know, in the process of unpacking and reorganizing things, and got all my clothes unpacked.
Takes 10 times longer than you think, right?
It really.
Yeah. 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 And you know, you just got to like pick at it. My goal for this week is to unpack 3 more boxes.
Nice.
Eric's been making tons of headway as well, but yeah, so that's going on. And I think more exciting than unpacking boxes is pretty much anything in the world, but specifically we've been going out and just like exploring the city, because you know, we used to live here, but it was many years ago. So some things have changed, some things have not. We've been going down to this little like speakeasy style bar called the Rathskeller, and they have like music, live music, like multiple times a week, every week. So we've been listening to some jazz, and Eric's been requesting Autumn Leaves from every single group, which is hilarious.
So eventually you will have to find a new place to go, I think.
Right.
No, I think he's actually given himself a mission to become that guy who requests Autumn Leaves. Really? Yep.
He's well on his way.
Yeah. One of the things that is happening right now in Minnesota is that our awful state flag, which is just a seal.
Racist seal on a blue background, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, because it's a state seal, so of course it is.
Yeah.
Anyway, they had a submission process to design a new Minnesota flag.
Right.
And I missed it. And I'm like, I think forever I will be upset. Not that I really thought I would you know, have a chance at getting it, but the 6 finalists for when we're sitting, when we're recording this, are being reviewed right now.
Yeah.
And they're not, I don't like any of them.
Some
of them are okay. Some of them are bad. But so that's why I feel kind of like I wish I'd have thrown my hat in the ring.
Because
if I didn't make it to that, at least I would have like, I wouldn't have missed the chance to.
Yeah.
Anyway, but the thing, the soapbox I'm on is there's one that I think is going to win, and I'm really mad about it because it's a good design, but it's a star in the middle of the field, and then on top of that is a snowflake, and it's in very simple patterns of parallelograms, and it's a really nicely designed, composed image, and I think that's what's probably going to get a leg up. But what I don't like, I don't want a snowflake on our flag.
Yeah.
Like, we do have extreme winters, but we also have extreme summers.
Yeah.
And I don't like the idea of thinking of Minnesota as a cold place, as its, like, core identity.
Yeah.
And so...
That's Alaska. They have that.
That's the thing. We don't live at the North Pole.
Yeah.
Our flag should not have a snowflake on it.
Yeah.
And I feel like, especially because this is happening in the winter, this review process, I am really nervous that's going to be our flag for the rest of our lives, I'm not happy about it.
I've seen those flags, and I don't only like one of them. All the other ones are boring.
Yeah.
And I like fancy flags with a bunch of junk on it, so I'm not the best judge.
Yeah.
But there's only one flag that I would tolerate. The other flags, I think the one you're describing is not one I would like.
Yeah. This is where, like, this is my soapbox about, like, meaning, and, like, the looking good is just not, it's not enough, I don't think. But I
agree.
Like,
that's what I was saying.
But I'm getting preemptively mad about a thing. We'll see what actually happens.
Hey everybody, it's Dale from the editing room letting you know that Mark and Dee did get preemptively mad because there is no snowflake on the state flag that was selected. It is blue and has a single star on it, but it has an even number of points on it, and it matches the star that's in the atrium of the state capitol. So, win for Mark.
Hey, Mark here from even deeper in the editing booth with a further update. They finalized the choice, and not only is it as Dale describes, but I really, really like it. Of the 6 finalists, they narrowed it down to 3, and then to 2, and then to 1, and then that 1, they actually had the committee bring in an expert and redesign and simplify, And that's what turned me around on it. The choice that they made for the finalist was really the best of the bunch, but I still didn't love it. It was when they brought some sort of more design thinking to it and simplified it, made it so that it wasn't really appealing to just what would be interesting now, but what could stand the test of time. And, you know, flag nerds all over the internet are praising it as well, so I'm not alone in the thinking. But I really, really am pleased how it turned out. So we'll put a link for that in the show notes. Happy ending.
Okay, we did meta stuff. Now we should talk about our accomplishments over this past year.
Yeah.
Mark, what did you do this year?
What I did is I published a game called Glom.
Oh,
it's a card game that I worked on with some friends of mine.
Oh, cool.
Cool.
And we put that out this year. It came out in the summer.
Okay.
And it was we saw it at the Origins Game Fair and at Gen Con, the biggest board game conventions in the country, and amongst the biggest in the world, where they were sold on the show floor, and where they sold out at least one of the shows, maybe both of them.
Yeah.
And it was a pretty big feather in my cap personally.
Yeah.
Because I worked on that game with some friends of mine.
Yeah, you did. Cool. That's exciting.
Yeah, it was really something. I think we talked about Glom a lot on the show the past couple of years.
Yeah.
We've certainly been imploring folks to buy it because you can go to Amazon and search the word Glom and it will come up.
Yeah.
Like on the warehouse with a billion products.
That's pretty big.
Yeah. You know, as far as I understand, we'll know more. We'll get sales reports from the publisher in January, so we'll know how it did, how the printing went. We'll know more, right?
Yeah.
And you know, fingers crossed that it can be an ongoing concern and can do well or can get a second edition or expansions. But but now, I mean, I think we're pretty happy that it's just out.
Mm-hmm. It's exciting.
What just mattered to me this year is that like it was a thing a lot of card game designers never get in their whole careers.
Yeah.
Is, you know, a published title on the show floor of the biggest show in the country, getting really good reaction and all the things we had. And I signed copies. Like,
That's crazy.
It was a very weird experience for a video game person, which we've talked a lot about on the show, our foray into that. But the other thing that was relevant to that is Dogpile, the next game that we worked on as part of our sort of Nice Games Jam graduation series. That game we did prototyping, we built out, I did graphic design for it, we made really nice decks for it, and we pitched it at these shows.
Yeah.
We are still in the process. We didn't get the early bite that we got with Glom.
Yeah.
But I don't think we were expecting that. We got really lucky with Glom. That was a really interesting process. And unlike with Glom, where we had our pal Peter to take it around for us, we did this one ourselves. And so I learned a lot in the process. So the thing is because I'm a video game person still, I think about it, I'm like, am I really going to be doing more of this next year or the year after? I'd still like to.
Yeah.
There's a whole episode of the show about this. Mm-hmm. Or we talk about that.
Yeah.
But I think it was a big deal this year because I know more about that process having gone through it.
Sure, yeah.
Than I did before. Mm-hmm. Another big accomplishment of mine is through the IDGATC, which is the Twin Cities chapter of the International Game Developers Association, which I'm a board member of, and I've talked about on the show a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
We put on 60 events.
Woo! In 2023. Ooh, that's a lot.
At 60 plus events.
Ooh,
so many.
Yeah. And that is something that as a board, every month we do our board meetings and we're like, we have to do a year-end report for the parent org so they can crow about all the cool things all these communities are doing.
Yeah.
And so we like to keep track of them. Mm. And we're like, let's do the math on this.
Yeah.
And which should have been obvious because on average in a month, we do more than one event a week. And they're all different types of events run by different people. And so it's a sustainable operation for the organization. But it also means we kind of forget how much it is.
Yeah.
Dale and I run Twin Cities Playtest, which is a monthly playtest event, which is really cool. And I would go into more details, but it would take forever. Steven, you run an event for the org as well.
Yes.
We do presentations. We have just a social event. There's a VR event. There's a Women in Games event. And they're all at different locations.
Yeah.
And they're all at a different vibe. Mm-hmm. They have crossover audience. But the community as a whole has really grown this year. And we've added new events. And we've been really consistent about doing them. And from where we're sitting, our holiday party, which we don't do any events in December except a holiday party, is just a nice get together for everybody.
Yeah.
And I'm really looking forward to seeing new faces because we've got new folks.
Yeah.
And I had a longstanding mission when I joined that board, which is to increase the diversity of the community, both demographically and experientially.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'm not ready to call mission accomplished. I feel like we're still not great in terms of the overall community, in terms of the representation we have within it. That's a longstanding legacy that I can go on and on about.
Yeah.
But we're taking steps, and it's finally paying off, starting to anyway.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I feel really proud of that. And that's like a team effort too, right? Like it's on my accomplishments, but like it took a bunch of people to make that happen.
Yeah.
And we have to keep that effort up.
Right.
It can slip. And
it can.
So I want to make sure that I put it here so I feel good about it.
Yeah.
But we host a global game jam here for them at Noble Robot. That was a big success. We just found out today we're going to do that again for 2024.
Cool.
So, yeah, I have a little side career as an event planner, and it's not something I thought I would do with my life as a game dev, but you know, you see a need and you fill it, I guess.
Yeah,
and then, you know, just the stuff I talked about last year. I put out on GitHub, I released Noble Engine, the engine for Playdate. I've been maintaining that all year.
Yeah.
Added a bunch of new features, accepting more contributions from more people. It is still much more of a side project than I'd hoped. I'd hoped to spend more time on it during the year, but it's going good. And the big accomplishment really is that there are commercial games now that use it.
Cool.
That are for sale on itch as well as in the official Playdate catalog, which is pretty exciting. It's like, well, okay. So I didn't finish my Playdate game, but other people did with my tools.
Hey. Yeah.
And they're selling it. And like, I'm not going to see a penny of that, but that's kind of not what I was in it for. So, and then, you know, Dream Settler, keeping on Dream Settler. Last year, I talked about wanting to make sure it came out in 2023. That was not in this. We redid the schedule a couple of times since then.
Yeah.
We haven't increased the scope. A lot of it was sort of the team had other. We moved things around, so it's not a big surprise or it's not like a delay exactly. But a lot of really good stuff happened this year. I'm really building out the tool system for building the fake web pages, including the standard that I wrote for it. That I cannot wait to talk more specifically about. I really want to give a presentation on this markup language that I developed because it's been, you know, 2+ years now that I've been working with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really proud of it. You know, the game doesn't need a lot of help adding a bunch of fantastic content. Like people are really cooking up some good stuff for it.
Cool.
So I really want to focus on making the interactive experience really, really rich and vibrant and meaningful.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's been a really good thing. And then the last one on here is I'm going to tease, which I'm doing, but it was a big deal. I personally secured a really big third party developer to work on a mini game for the project.
Yeah.
Which is really, really exciting.
It is.
And a lot of the work on that is done already. So it's interesting.
A lot of stuff.
It's interesting because like normally I talk about these little discrete things,
mm-hmm.
but most of my work this year was in Dream Settler, and it's still new to me, even though it's been 2 years, to just have a job. And then most of my accomplishments really.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not detailing them up, but it's most of the things I did and did well this year related to my job. It's still a new.
That's a really big list. Like. You guys have been super busy.
Also, not for nothing, we put out like 50 episodes.
Oh, right. That counts.
Something like that. I didn't add that to my list. So I guess it's taken as read.
Right. That's huge.
Well, Steven, what did you get up to in 2023?
Ah, good question.
Mm-hmm.
I have, we put out a game called Glom.
Yeah?
Cool card game.
Just yourself?
I worked on it with some friends, actually.
Oh, cool.
Really nice. Yeah, it was really nice. It worked really well. I actually played it with my family and friends and stuff. My friends bought copies of it, and they keep singing praises of the game.
Nice.
Which feels really good. So it feels really good that we were able to get Glom out. So thank you, my friends. For helping us with Glom.
Good job, Steven's friends.
For helping me with Glom. It's great. Yeah, good job, Steven's friends. We got funding for a vertical slice at Future Club.
Yeah.
So I've been working on that for the past 5 months. This last month was real intense. I think I talked about it in the previous episode that like it was just getting really intense. But we shipped it last Friday? 2 Fridays ago.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that. It went okay. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like crunch, I guess.
Yeah.
You know? I want to talk about, actually, hold me accountable in this. I want to talk about crunch in a future episode after hiatus.
Okay. Some listener write that.
Yeah.
Get that note back to us.
Yeah, let me know. Write it down. Because I think, I don't know, I suppose my stance on crunch has not changed that I think, I'm personally of the opinion that all crunch is bad. But, I mean, I don't know. Things got to get done sometimes.
Yeah, when you work hard and it feels satisfying, sometimes you look back like, but was that crunch?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's a tough thing.
And I suppose that's fair too, because like sometimes it's not necessarily. Sometimes it's just you're in the thing and you really want to work hard on it.
Well, sometimes it is crunch.
Sometimes it is crunch.
But it didn't kill you. And so you have to remember, oh, but it is still bad.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That's kind of That's kind of how I'm feeling about it.
Yeah.
But I'm glad we got it done. And so we've pitched it and we're waiting on we're supposed to find out about. Whether or not we get published, we have a meeting with them this week. It's at the end of the week, which is annoying.
So you'll know by the time
The time this episode comes out, yeah, that's true. But I guess listeners will have to wait till after hiatus. No, just ask me on the Discord. You got to be on the Discord, though.
Yeah.
Askgames.club/Discord. Yeah, so otherwise, we're still working on other future club things. We're still making projects and things to pitch to people. We don't have anything, like, fully published yet. We're still working on Skullgirls stuff, but outside of that, we don't have any. Well, we got a few. Actually, we do have like one thing we're working on that I'm not really involved in because it's art and animation project.
But like contract work then?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, it's contract work. So that's good. That's given us a little bit more money. We actually are going to be pitching a game to a celebrity in like a month. It's kind
of interesting.
I never would have thought that I'd be working on a game that could potentially be associated with a celebrity.
Uh-huh.
So that's kind of weird.
Well, without revealing anything, you have talked about how your company is working with licensors. Mm-hmm.
Yes,
and that's been you've been in those conversations.
Well, yeah, we have we have an agent who's been helping us talk to people and pitch things, and he brought this opportunity for us.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of why, you know, I think that's why this came up all of a sudden, because I think our game kind of this game idea that we've had, I think it's that card game that I've talked about a little bit on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Has potential with some people, I guess. They're interested in it. We'll see if that leads to anything. We're working on that.
Yeah.
We're working on that this week because we're sick of working on the an additional thing that's kind of a side thing is I survived the snake basement for
three whole months.
Yeah. That's my brother's basement.
Would you like to elaborate or do you want to make people dig into previous episodes?
No, I'll elaborate a little bit. I live with my brother for a few months this year. And we found out he had snakes, and they kept coming, and they just kept coming.
Yeah, not like in a terrarium, but like
in the
walls.
No, they were in the walls. They were literally in the walls. Literally, you could hear them while I was trying to sleep. It was really bad. It wasn't. They didn't do the little.
Right.
They just made noise because like the walls.
Well, they weren't cartoon finished. Snakes.
No. The walls weren't finished, so they were just.
Your stories now sound a lot scarier than I remember.
It's real. It was not. It was unpleasant. But he did. He's now my brother is finishing up the basement, and he's plugged up all the holes where the snakes were getting in.
Yeah.
There was a hole like right outside the garage, and they had to dig deep. He said he was going. They were going into the foundation. They had to plug up all that stuff.
Like they were mining for snakes.
Kinda. So they plugged up all the holes, and then he's gotten all the snakes out of his house. He feels really confident that there won't be any more snakes.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see. I don't know. I was there.
Pride before the fall and all.
Yeah, I'm saying. He felt that way a few times before, so mm-hmm. I don't know. We'll see. But I did that, too. So it's been a year.
Yeah.
It's been a year. It's been a good year, I think, I would say.
I mean, you ended the year without snakes in your walls. So.
Exactly. Yeah, I've moved.
What else could you ask for?
I've since moved out. I'm so glad I did when I did. And I like my new apartment. My new apartment is nice too.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, things are going.
I'm just kind of stuck.
Ellen,
I'm still kind of mentally stuck on the idea of mining for snakes. Like you'd mine for like gems. Uh-huh. It's like, oh, it's a 24 karat snake. Or like.
That really sounds like a mobile game.
Yeah, it does.
Oh, next nice game.
Yeah.
Next nice game, Jim. Yeah.
You find catch all the snakes.
Yeah.
So I also released a card game. It's called Glom.
Oh.
Yeah. And I made it with some friends.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's a funny story. It started out as a game jam game, and then we just kept going with it. Yeah.
Ooh.
And then
I hear that's a good or bad idea.
It is.
Yeah, it could go.
It is a good or a bad idea that statement returns true.
Is that your first programmer joke?
It might be.
It's a really good one.
It was good. Yeah.
And you've played that with your friends, but you've played that with your teacher.
I've played it with my teacher friends. I've played it with my family, and I have a coworker who bought it, and she's really excited about it. Her family loves it. It's pretty crazy. It's just, I don't know. People like our game. It's so wild. Like you can just go and buy it on Amazon, and people like playing it. People voluntarily play it. People on YouTube who we don't know have reviewed it and been like, "It's good. It's fun." We did that.
Yeah.
Did that.
Yeah.
Well, I mentioned your teacher friends because that's the one thing that, I mean, you knew this immediately and you told us and we believed you, but it was really cool to see it, that the reviews and comments we've gotten on it, the most positive ones have been from not just people who love English, yeah, but teachers. Mm-hmm. And that has been really interesting because, like, it was not a specific outcome we designed, but it was definitely an expression of the goals of our design, which is to get people to play with language and to understand more about how a sentence is structured and how expressive English can be, or whatever language if you want to translate the game. And the people who don't need any convincing that that's an interesting thing saw it immediately.
Yeah,
that was exciting.
It's how far can you push English before it becomes nonsense? It turns out the answer is really far.
Well, what I love about it is that the answer is as you like, or not very far if you like.
Yeah.
depends on your audience. So there's that. We did a bunch of podcast episodes, and then for things that are Ellen specific, we finished two big custom game projects or game-based learning projects that I can't really talk about, but they were really big and now they're done. And that's awesome. Yeah. So, cool. Yay.
Well, plus Noodle, which you have talked about.
And Noodle, yep. Noodle I can and have talked about. And that's exciting. The company, like the marketing team, has done like daily noodles throughout November. Like, they're just putting out noodle puzzles every day. Like, it's just pretty fun. Yeah. It's just cool to have that out there. And it'll be out there in like perpetuity. It was cool for lots of different reasons, right? Like, it was a new game on the platform. That's exciting for everybody. It was also like built in kind of a using like a new code library for the development team, and so people learned a lot. And you know, team working with kind of a new team working with a new system on a new game, and it was like pretty good. I'm excited to see what we do next.
That's great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, congrats. I mean, we all released a card game this year.
Yeah.
But I would say that Noodle is probably, of all the things we've put out or whatever, that probably has the largest reach of anything any of us have worked on.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which, means whatever it means, but, like, congratulations. That's a huge deal.
Thanks. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's pretty exciting, and it's really neat. It's weird to, like, not, I don't know. I want to hear more about how people are using it.
Yeah.
So I got to go to more conferences, which is one of the things that I did do this year as well. So I got to go to more like conferences and talk to people and see if they've played Noodle anyway. But for this year, I finally made it to the Serious Play conference, which was up in Toronto, which is a whole adventure with like bed bugs and black squirrels. And it was great. And I did not end up getting bed bugs at my house nor at the new house.
Thank goodness.
Take precautions.
Yeah.
Don't cheap out on hotels. Yeah. So we just met some great people, some of whom we featured on the show. Left really inspired and like feeling like I was on the right track, you know, like
nice.
You can just kind of end up in your own head with all this stuff. In more personal notes, I got a road bike and I went road biking. That was cool. And then I moved. Yep. I got a road bike. I biked to the office a couple times, which was really hard.
No, but it's cool.
Pretty cool, Steven. All your friends are doing it.
Yeah, well,
my friends are doing it.
Not cool, so.
Oh, man, that's like a get out of peer pressure card.
It is.
Yeah, well, the cool kids are doing it, but I'm not one of those. Yeah, then I moved to Duluth. And I'm still moving? No, I've moved to Duluth.
I feel like we should have taken screenshots of the last couple of recording sessions so we can get the time lapse of all the plants behind you in your office.
Yeah. That's
good. Because there's more now.
There's more now. They're not very happy right now. It's too dry.
All right. Should we do the list?
Yeah, let's get off of this personal business.
Blah, blah, blah.
Other stuff, things that came out that we didn't make.
Yes.
Now, what does nicest mean, Steven?
It is a list of games that we enjoyed and we want to be nice to, but is it not necessarily the list of the best games of the year or the games that we've our favorites of the year? It's just a list of games that we just want to be nice to.
Right. And the reason we do that is because we want it to be like a more nuanced sort of exploration of the things that came out.
Yes.
But also, we don't want to be held accountable for this.
Absolutely.
That's an important angle here.
Yeah, we'll keep that in mind when we get to my section. Just saying.
Well, Ellen, let's hear yours.
So some of these, I don't think, and these didn't come out in 2023 and whatever.
That's fine.
But my list this year has kind of a theme. I didn't play a lot of PC or console games,
mm-hmm.
but those I did play, and also the New York Times Games app, which is not a mobile, which is not a console game, but is like...
It's my most played game.
Yeah, it is. It's on this list for a reason. And so I'm putting Baldur's Gate 3 up there, Kirby and the Forgotten Land, and New York Times Games app for all for the same reason, which is they have... help me like connect with family members in new ways.
Oh.
So Eric and I are spinning up a co-op playthrough of Baldur's Gate 3, which I think I've mentioned on the show before, like he and I have really different gaming interests. So like we don't always get to play video games together a lot. Like sometimes we find something that overlaps. We've both really liked playing Borderlands games together.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Because, you know, it's got enough numbers to be fiddly and it's got enough explosions for me.
Yeah.
Right.
So perfect. We've played some like Magic the Gathering together. That one's a little tougher because it's like you can go really hard into magic, mm-hmm. and I generally don't go really hard into anything, yeah. but Eric does. Anyway, so Baldur's Gate 3, it's like, oh, all right, we can play this game together. It's going to be great. So we're excited. We're spinning that up. I've had multiple nephews play Kirby in the Forgotten Land with me.
Yeah.
And with Eric, which has been super great because, like, yeah, they're like just. At that age, you know, it's like just perfect. So those have been really great. And then a New York Times Games app, few of the family members just get on there every day and we play the same three puzzles and we post our scores to each other in the same text chat. And it's just kind of like a hey.
Yeah.
Hey, how much slower were you than Eric at the mini today? Oh, he was only a minute faster than you. Yeah, he was 50 seconds faster than me. It's a record, you know? So it's been fun. Just those kind of fun moments. And those games get on the list for just creating that kind of connection, for sure. We had some horse games related conversations this year. And so I'm going to list lots of those. I'm going to list Rival Stars Horse Racing for letting my inner horse girl run free. I was playing the nonsense out of that game for a while, as you know. I haven't played it for months and I probably won't pick it up again, but it was a lot of fun while I played it. And lots of really hilarious horse names. And, you know, we got to speak with Rick, who was part of the team who developed it, you know, like that's pretty special. And then I think the last thing I'll mention on this list is actually a studio, not a specific game. But I have been playing the bees. I don't even, that's not a saying, but it just feels right here. I've been playing the bees out of these games. Like all of the flying insects are gone from these games. That's how much I've been playing them. And these are games. Yeah. So Afterburn, they're a studio out of Poland. And they, their studio page has three games listed. One of them is Golf Peaks. One of them is In Bento. And the other one is the one I'm playing right now, which is it Railbound? Yeah, I think it's Railbound. And so these are all kind of, you know, 2D spatial organization puzzle games where you're moving things around, you're connecting things. Golf Peaks has some three-dimensional elements because you're dealing with like, you know, elevation when you're pitching the ball. But the puzzles are delightful for one, like the games are absolutely super well polished, super delightful, fun to play. But the reason that they, you know, go from that level to definitely nicest of 2023 is these are the best tutorials I've ever encountered in any game ever. Like, just like these paper thin slices of mechanics that you layered on each level. It's absolutely brilliant. And I can't wait to see. Fortunately, Railbound is huge. There's like tons and tons of levels and some of them are really hard. So I'm going to probably be working through that one for a while. But like, I'm going to be so sad when I run out of levels because it's just like, I really am looking forward to, you know, what that studio does in the future. I can see them doing some really cool stuff. So shout out to Afterburn, and maybe we'll have them on the show next year if we can get in touch with them.
Yeah, that would
be cool.
All right, Mark, you're next.
Well, Super Mario Wonder came out pretty recently. Mm-hmm. And
that's it. That's the list, right?
I played all of it.
Yeah.
There was nothing left anymore.
Yeah.
I got through the whole thing.
Yeah.
And that's a little sad.
Oh.
Because I finished, and I mean finished, and there's literally nothing left for me to do.
Right.
Much faster than any other Mario game I've played.
Okay. I've heard that from other people, too.
Yeah. I think the game is, it doesn't get hard until late,
yeah.
And then it gets really hard. So it's at the later stages, and the special stuff are as hard as any Mario game.
Yeah.
And so they're just there to satisfy longtime Mario players.
Right.
But most of the game is just a joy to romp through.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the right balance. Like, as someone who's into Mario and like likes a good Mario challenge,
yeah.
Like, I didn't feel coddled or babied, but yeah. it's a much easier game. It gives you much more freedom to all the badge system is interesting because you can basically cheese any level you want.
Yeah.
Like, not fully. But essentially, the challenge is there for you, and if you want, you can work around most of them.
Yeah,
like most of the really, really tough ones. Eventually, anyway, once you get a lot of things, but
sure.
Because you've worked your way through to collect all those things, including like understanding how to use the new power ups in a way that's kind of like OP, or the badges that will help you like go back to an earlier level to get all the special things,
mm-hmm.
or some of the things like when you get the big purple coins, which there's three of them in every level.
Yeah,
you can get them. It's like there's ones that are like really hard ones where you have to like jump in a pit and wall jump out of it, that kind of thing.
Yeah,
if you get it and die, as long as you don't restart the level, it still counts as collected. So you can kind of cheese that too.
Mm-hmm.
The game is just uninterested in you proving yourself to it.
Yeah.
Which is really nice because then it frees you to just prove it to yourself.
Yeah.
Right? Which is really, really
That's
fun.
Cool.
So you have the opportunity. So I think what that means is it's a challenge insofar that the challenge is there for you.
Yeah.
It's not that you can choose your level of difficulty, which is true in a lot of games. It's how we design Widget Satchel, for example.
Mm-hmm.
But it's basically not really keeping track of how well you've completed the challenge.
Yeah.
But you know when you did. And I think that's a really, really elegant game design. And it really makes me happy as someone who wants to see less like gatekeeping challenges, but still wants to see a lot of challenge in games. Because I think people conflate those two things very frequently.
Yeah.
So I really, really enjoyed that. But it did mean that I breezed through it pretty quickly.
Sure.
Even though I was like not putting on the extra high jump or extra run fast badges.
Yeah.
Because it is, I think, independent of all of that, it is an easier game. But it's just got so much personality. It's so joyful. And I think that we might have mentioned that when the game came out, but like it isn't that different from like New Super Mario Brothers, but it reminds me of like Windows Vista and Windows 7, if you'll go with me on this.
Yeah.
Where everyone hated Windows Vista and then Windows 7 came out and it's basically the exact same thing. Mm. Like it's amazing how not different Windows 7 was from Windows Vista and how everyone was like, oh, it's the best thing ever. Finally they fixed everything.
Yeah.
And then everyone talked about all the things it has. Like Vista had all that stuff.
Yeah.
And it's just because it's not about what it is, it's about how it lives and how it presents, how it integrates into your life.
Mm.
And so the same thing happened here where people got really sick of New Super Mario Brothers. It was four or five games that all looked the same and felt a little bit too soft around the edges. The style felt really generic.
Yeah.
It felt key art. It felt, you know, a promo art rather than actual art.
Yeah.
I think that's what people got the vibe on it. And Super Mario Brothers Wonder has so much more distinct personality.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just because owing to a lot of its animation choices and which is pulled from the traditions of traditional animation.
Yeah.
And so it's just better executed in that way, no doubt.
Mm.
But it plays very similar. It's just as charming. I think the music in the new Super Mario Bros. Games is better, but only slightly. So really, it's, you know, it's on balance for its era, especially because the last new one was a decade ago.
Yeah.
Isn't that much better objectively.
Mm.
But people really love Super Mario Bros. Wonder. And they're like, but the new Super Mario games, those were kind of awful.
Yeah.
Like, this is the best game since Mario 3 or since Mario World or whatever.
Seen that too.
And I don't really believe that's true, but like, it feels true and that's good enough for most people.
Yeah.
Huh.
And it really, it does prove how important that expression is and how that personality is very vital.
Yeah.
I loved it. I loved everything about it. It was so fantastic.
Cool.
The one criticism I have, I talked to you about this the other day, is that there's a lot of music theme stuff in the game,
yeah.
but it's not foregrounded. The final Bowser battle has a music theme. A lot of the bonus stages are musical.
Yeah.
A lot of the enemies are more musically interactive than ever. But it's not Super Mario Brothers medley or something, yeah. Which I feel like I'm guessing at one point in the development, music was a bigger theme in the game because there's so much music stuff in the game, but it's not really foregrounded. The Wonder Flower is the big thing that's surrounding you all the time.
Right.
That kind of concept. Mm-hmm. The talking flowers in the game, I felt like more of them probably sang to you in an earlier version of the game. And so part of me wishes for another game that went in that direction.
Yeah.
But I'm certainly very pleased with where they ended up.
You know, I'm reminded now, the new Super Mario Bros. Games had a little bit of music-y stuff too. Not like actual, not like the way they do it in Wonder, but you know how they go, that thing. Like the Koopas go, and they dance to it, and it'd mess up your jumps, and I'd get annoyed.
because you have to listen to the music. It's a holistic experience.
Yeah. Well, I was playing on my DS. Sometimes I was really late at night, and I didn't want to really hear.
What, you didn't have your 2005 earbuds in?
I should have, I guess. But I think it's interesting because it does seem like they've experimented with that a little bit with the Super Mario Brothers series.
Yeah.
But this is like more of it, but not like they still didn't like fully lean into it.
Yeah. It makes me think, like, I wonder if they really go for it next time.
Yeah.
I hope so, because it's a great idea. And the stuff that's in the game is really great for it. But it isn't really what the game is ultimately themed around.
Yeah.
And you can see that. But you can see the development in the final product.
Yeah.
Now, that's fascinating as a designer.
They could call it Super Mario Bros. Medley. Yeah.
I did just mention that.
Oh, did you? Oh, my bad.
Great minds. Great minds.
Crap. Yeah.
We've got to do it now.
I thought I was so clever. Turns out it was.
You are. You are clever. And Mark is clever.
Hey, I'm going to give you some credit. Yeah. Maybe you weren't listening.
Yeah, it was that. Thanks, Mark. That makes me feel so much better.
I've talked way too much about Mario, no one ever. But also, Dale and I went to Super Nintendo World this year, and I just wanted to talk about that just briefly, because we talk a lot about that.
Mm-hmm.
But we 100%ed that as a team.
Yeah,
that
cool.
was super fun. All my thoughts on that are in that episode back when. I think probably some Patreon content.
I think it is Patreon content.
As well, mm-hmm. So take a peek for that. Mm-hmm. Another game that Dale and I played together was Star Trek Resurgence. Which I forgot about. Steven, you reminded me that that game came out this year because it's a pretty short narrative game.
Yeah.
And then you're done with it. It doesn't. There's no engagement metrics.
Yeah, you said it was like 3 hours?
It's probably a little longer than that, but it was just a couple hours. Yeah.
Okay.
Dale had the wheel, and I was in the couch next to her, and cool. we played through it. And I've talked about it on the show before when it was out, but like it's such a great combination of that narrative mechanics and really, really solid Star Trek storytelling.
Yeah.
That it's all about these, you know, like Lower Decks, the show is about the other characters, right? That's the theme.
Yeah.
But as that show has gone on, those are the main characters.
Yeah.
This is sort of had the same kind of idea. It's like, it's a minor ship, not the most famous captain, and a couple of side characters you play as a non-com officer. It's all very much just like, you know, what it is like to be an officer in Star Trek rather than the story of the best characters in the Federation, right? Which is great for a game in a rich world like that.
Mm-hmm.
And just cool Star Trek themes and, as far as like a Telltale style game goes, pretty good about how like your narrative choices work. You never have to feel like you're picking the right choice or the wrong choice.
Yeah.
Which, as much as all narrative games wish that were true, so few that's actually true.
Mm.
You kind of always know that there's a ideal outcome.
Yeah.
And this game was pretty aggressive about like, you know, you can choose, and you always choose things you think is right.
Mm-hmm.
And often things are obviously more right than others. But mm-hmm. the best thing about it is that the choices you make, you know the context they are in other choices. You're like, this is the right choice. But if I make it, then there will be other things that happen that are not good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that is something that you never see in these multiple choice games.
Mm.
And so I don't want to give it too much praise. Mm. It just tipped over the edge of being of nailing that in a way that most games don't. But it wasn't like, you know, it wasn't that much better objectively than the games that do it. It just had a little bit more that made that work.
Mm.
And Star Trek's a perfect setting for that kind of storytelling too.
Yeah.
So I loved it. I didn't press a single button. I just watched it, and I told Dale what I thought she should do, and she did whatever she wanted, which was fun. So it's kind of just like watching an episode of the show.
Nice.
But it is the perfect game to play with somebody, and whether you're participating in the decision-making or not,
yeah.
you still feel involved.
Cool.
And I really like that. The last two on my list are both similar to the New York Times app, which I also played a ton of this year. The Zachtronics Solitaire Collection.
Yeah.
We had Zach Barth on the show earlier in the year. He was so kind to gift us codes for that game.
Yeah.
Which we did not need to interview him.
Yeah.
So it was really a gift.
Yeah, it was.
And I'm still playing the ton out of that. I'm playing the bees out of that Solitaire Collection.
All the bees. Yeah. All the insects.
All the bees. Having so much fun with it. And it makes me think about games that, when I talk about games I want to make, I always want to talk, story is important to me.
Yeah.
Narrative and meaning and expression is important to me. It's what I think games should be doing. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, a lot of the games I play are abstracted or purely sort of like repetitive skill or things like the crossword. Mario is sort of like that in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
There's more going on to Mario than most people think, but a lot of my favorite games are not the things I talk about, the things I want to make. I've long recognized that as like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still important for me to talk about the games I think are important to make and what I think other people should make. And certainly the ones I'm going to, you know, try to do. But I always have to remember like that it's, you know, there's still that part of play that is important in its own right.
Yeah.
And the Zachtronics Solitaire Collection is a great example of this. And then the other one is called Puzmo. It's a, mm-hmm. it's a new website from Zach Gage,
yep.
And it's invite only right now. But it's really you just have to solve a puzzle to get an invite. It's really cute. It's like the New York Times app where there's a sort of medium sized crossword every day, and then a couple of daily puzzles. Mm-hmm. One of them is really bad chess, which a lot of people know, and I've become obsessed with through this.
Yeah.
Some word games and some. It's really interesting. But also very social, like mm-hmm. Ellen, you're talking about. It has a friend system, so you can compare scores.
Yep.
Right now, I don't have any friends on it because it's nobody I know is on it. But it has like global leaderboards, which I hate actually.
Yeah.
It brings out all the wrong types of competition, and I think this is my criticism of it is that the game design. It very frequently makes compromises to preserve the integrity of the global leaderboards in a way that I think is pointless and I think hurts the experience of the game. Like one example is there's a puzzle game called Spell Tower where you spell words and then the letters cascade down and you try to clear them all. This is a high scoring word, but if you do it, then the letters that fall will not make other words. So there's some strategy involved. If you make a mistake, there's no undo.
Yeah.
But also there's no restart. And the reason is to preserve the integrity of the leaderboards. Mm. And that seems to me absolutely ridiculous because one, I'd like to play the day's puzzle and then try again for a better score.
Yeah,
but it will not let you do that. Oh. It makes me think about like when you have like a group chat or you share scores with friends, that is like a really sort of friendly competition, and like that. But when you're competing with the whole world and there's no, you don't have any relationship with the people you're competing against, it really brings out a lot of the worst in it. And it kind of drives me crazy every day. But Puzmo is great. The games on it are really good. Some of them are new. Some of them are from the sort of history of Zach Gage's games. Just really, really good and fun. And again, tons of personality.
Yeah.
We'll put that link in the show notes. And so you can get it. You request an invite. And then you solve a puzzle, and I think you get like if you're the first 500 to solve a puzzle every day, it'll eventually be opened up, so it's not like hard to get access to it. But I'd recommend people check it out, especially if you are a person who does like Spelling Bee or Connections or Wordle on the New York Times app, because it's just more of that basically with its own unique spin.
Cool.
Yep. And then I just briefly, because I've spent way too long, I think the big sequel, Spider-Man 2, Tears of the Kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I had a lot of fun with those.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Just big sequels. The game's already played. Mm. I mean, I've talked about how much I like those games. Spider-Man, I just finished you know, recently, and I really, really loved it.
Mm.
But also, didn't add anything to my life.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
That was a great game.
Yep.
And so I did want to mention that because those are the games I probably spent the most time with and maybe had the most fun with. But I wouldn't call them nicest of the year.
Mm. Yeah.
Well,
you know? Doesn't mean they're not great.
No, nicest is up to you to determine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's what, yeah.
So, Steven, why is there no Kirby game on your list?
Because they're... Okay, when did Kirby and the Forgotten Land come out?
I don't know. It was just on Ellen's list.
Okay. It was on Ellen's list, but it came out last year.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. It wasn't this year.
It was a holiday game last year?
Okay. Yeah. And I don't think there was a Kirby that came out this year.
Yeah.
Right?
There's like side games that come out pretty frequently, right? But yeah, there wasn't one this year?
Once in a while, yeah. But there wasn't one. And the actual reason why Kirby didn't come up is because Spirit Island has taken over my life.
Which was on your list last year.
It was, as an honorable mention. It's no longer an honorable mention. I play it way too much to just honorably mention it. It's like Civ 6, but like take that and make it an hour long And then you play 20 games of it, and it doesn't even make a difference. Yeah. It's just nice stopping points. You can go get snacks. it's just a very fun game. It's like it's a really condensed 4X game, and I play it solo a lot. Yeah. It's a multi. I mean, it's a co-op game, multiplayer game. Yeah. But I tend to play it solo a lot.
That is what is interesting about it to me, is that it's a co-op game.
Yeah.
No, that's fascinating.
And the co-op aspect of it is really fun too.
Did you say it's a board game? Did you say that?
Oh, sorry. It is a board game. Yeah. I play it on Tabletop Simulator, but it is a board game. They also have app versions of it too. I actually have that app on my phone when I need my fix.
it's real bad. So, well, Ellen was talking about the horse game all year. You were silently having the exact same experience with Spirit Island.
A little bit. Shoot. Yeah.
I was having the same experience with the Zachtronic Soldier.
Yeah. Turns out.
Just took up all the oxygen and raining. And
it really did. Yeah. Yeah. Well, we just let Ellen talk about it, so we didn't look bad.
Yeah, it's fine.
But yeah, no. It's just, I don't know, it's just very fun. There's a lot of varieties. There's a bunch of different spirits and stuff you can play. And I like it because, like, I like mastery, right? So, like, I'm really trying to get good with one particular spirit with a bunch of the different adversaries that they have, too, that you can fight against. And I just, I don't know, it's just, one thing that's really fun is because the games are relatively short, you can feel like you can experiment with a bunch of different strategies and things. But, like, because, like, you also draft cards during the game, like, the game experience changes based off of what you draft.
Yeah.
So like you kind of just gain overall knowledge, which I don't know, I think is really fun and cool.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's just, it's real good. It's real good.
Yeah. I played it one time this year.
Yes.
You,
I forced you to play it.
You forced Dale and I to play it at Origins.
Yes.
And I really enjoyed it. And the thing I liked most about it was that it's a really good co-op board game.
Yeah.
It doesn't, you knew the most about it and you did a lot of like, telling us what to do, but we never felt without agency, and we never, and so I mean, part of that is that is the players you play with, but I think the game also does a really good job of making it very difficult to control the board as one player,
right,
while everybody else just watches, just does the thing you tell them to do. But you were still telling us what to do, so like it didn't, it channeled that instinct of the dominant player in a way that still felt very enjoyable for the non-dominant player. So I really like that about it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I have some criticisms. I won't get into them. But I'm actually, I should need to play more because I don't really see why you love it so much.
I mean, I think it's just the way that I play games. It works for me.
Yeah.
That's why. Because it really does feel like Civ. And you didn't get into, you've played Civ a few times.
I played it a bunch. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fair. You've played it a bunch. But like, you didn't get into Civ like I got into Civ.
Oh, yeah. I definitely was like, I'll be whatever leader. Who cares?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, and I
wasn't interested in the nuance of that stuff.
And I like that stuff. Yeah. So like, I think that's why I've gotten into it.
Because Spirit Island does a lot of that too. Yeah.
It scratched that itch.
But I do really mean I need to play it again.
That's fair.
It's not that it's like I can't see what he likes in it. It's like I just didn't see it yet.
Oh, yeah.
It's there. I'm certain, and I would see it. I think I need to play with you.
Yeah. Well, I'll bring him a copy.
Yeah.
The next game on here is Forspoken. This is why I want y'all to remember that the nicest is not the best. I really enjoyed Forspoken. It's very fun, and I 100%ed it. I even got the doggone trophies, and y'all know how I hate trophies and achievements. That's how fun this game was for me.
Uh-huh.
And I really had a good time with it. I keep telling my brother, I'm like, dang, I wish I could play Forspoken again, but I did all the things. So like, I don't feel like I want to play it again, but I want to play it again. I bought the DLC, the DLC, 100% of the DLC. Like, it's a fun game. I know they're not going to make more because I don't think that game sold very well.
Yeah.
And it definitely was not critically acclaimed or anything like that. So it's just,
well, critics liked it, but they had a hard time telling people to go play it, I think.
That was not the impression I got, but maybe
you're
right.
Okay.
I mean, I didn't, it's not like I went scrolling Metacritic to see what the criticisms were.
I think it's definitely a case of like people were like, well, this seems kind of young adult and the style, it's the difference between genre and genre.
Yeah.
I think is what happened. Is like people like, you really needed someone to really like both parts of it in order to get a rave.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't the default fantasy or sci-fi experience that everyone is just happy to play.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I actually really liked about Forspoken is due to the dialogue. Like, it didn't take its... Well, it took itself seriously in points when it did, and that part I liked the least about it. But when it didn't take itself seriously, that was when it was more fun.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I liked about it. I liked the little dialogues and quips with the main character and stuff. And it was like, oh, look at all this fantasy stuff. This is silly. I'm like, you know, you're right. You're absolutely right, main character. so I really like that aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's worth checking out if the gameplay or narrative or anything like was interesting to you. And then the last thing on my list is Deceive Incorporated, which is like a weird first person stealth game. sort of, it's not a stealth game. It's really more of a first-person shooter with stealth elements. You basically, like, you start out on a map disguised as a bunch of civilians or guards or staff people in the area, and you just have to, like, you have to complete a certain objectives so you can break into the vault and grab the case and then escape with the vault.
Cool.
Meanwhile, everybody else is trying to do the exact same thing. And you have to try to suss out who is, you know, who is not a civilian or and who is a spy. So there's aspects of stealth.
Yeah.
I don't typically like first-person shooters in general because, like, I don't like the aspect of shooting. Mm-hmm. Not because I think shooting is bad, but more just, like, it's not something that
No, you're pro-shooting. We understand
that. Right. I don't enjoy the aspect of shooting. Yeah. So I really like this aspect or this game because, like, I get to feel like I can get through the game without having to be a good shot.
Yeah.
Which is really fun. And it's a fun game that me and my brother have played. It's actually kind of reminiscent of a game that came out on the Xbox Live Arcade years ago called Bloody Good Time. Mm-hmm. That was really cool. It's kind of like that game a bit. It reminds me of it a lot.
Yeah.
I don't know if listeners have heard of that. Maybe we'll put a link in the show notes for that game. But yeah, it's just really fun. It's a blast. And it's cheap too. It was like $20. Yeah, so those are my three nicest. I got a couple of honorable mentions.
Yes.
One is the Tears of the Kingdom, but not the whole game.
Right.
Just the Ascend ability.
Oh, we got to fight about this.
Why? Like, okay. Look, I don't know. I don't have that much to say. I just really like the Ascend ability, and I wish it was in more things. It's so cool, but so simple. I just want that in more stuff.
Yeah.
That's all I really want to say.
Yeah.
That's all I got to say about it.
I was very frustrated by it.
Yeah.
It made no story sense.
Sure.
Its upper limit was arbitrary.
Yeah, that's true.
Very frequently, you'd be in a cave, and you couldn't go through the ceiling, but if you walked near the sloped walls, you'd be fine.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay. It just never felt cohesive to me at all.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know. I think I liked it. I liked the Ascend ability because it felt like it added some navigational, not challenge, but like interest.
It did let the level design be more interesting.
Yes.
When you used it in a level and not just out in the world,
yeah,
it was pretty, like, when it was designed for it was pretty compelling.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, yeah. And so I think that's what aspect of it was cool. Mm-hmm. And every time I see, like, a little cliff or whatever in another game, I'm like, I can't descend.
Maybe part of it is I love climbing in Breath of the Wild so much.
Yeah.
And I go for stamina right away.
Oh, I mean, I do
too. And I get the rock climbing outfit, and I'm just like, I'm walking up them walls. I don't need that ascend ability.
That's fair. Yeah, I guess I don't enjoy the climbing as much. And I think that's part of why I like the ascend. I like looking for a location so I could ascend.
Yeah.
Things feel better.
Right, and both what I do and what you do is a waste of time.
Ultimately.
But like, just fun for our style of play.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then I put Baldur's Gate 3 on this list as an honorable mention, not because I spend a lot of time playing this game, and it's a very fun co-op game. In particular because, like, everybody brings their own attitudes and stuff to the game, and ideally you aren't ruining other people's fun by playing it, the way you are. But, like, it creates a lot of fun narrative moments for a group of four in a way that is really cool. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to mention that. I have played a lot of it, and I still am. So,
okay. Okay, folks. I'm talking to the two of you right now.
Oh, yes, us, yes.
We're going on a hiatus next week.
We are.
Oh. We'll be out for 2 months.
Yeah.
But of course, as we do every year, we put on what we call our nice replays,
mm-hmm.
where people can listen to some of our favorites. And each episode starts with some commentary from us, so it's still new content for you.
Yes.
A reminder of episodes you have. And one of the things I found out this year
by
going through our analytics is that we have way many more subscribers than we do listeners per each episode. And I think that makes a lot of sense. We're very topic-based. Sometimes it's not a topic you're interested in. Sometimes you want to go back to it. And our older episodes get a lot of downloads for a show like ours. I think people do go back. I can only guess your behavior, dear listener. But we've found every year when we curate our best of the year, we get a lot of good response from listeners who either want a refresher or didn't hear that episode the first time.
Yeah.
And so the point of what I'm getting to is that one of the reasons we do the hiatus is so we can do that, but it's also part of the operation of the show. It's how we keep things sustainable. Mm-hmm. We do need a little bit of time off from producing episodes every week. And one of the other things that can help keep the show alive and keep it going is...
Patreon!
Patreon!
Yeah.
That's right. It's a big pitch. Give us your dollars, folks.
Yes, please, please, please.
Any amount of money, any smallest you can give per month, will get you ad-free episodes every week and bonus content.
Yeah.
So that's all fantastic. And, you know, that's a great argument. You pay very little for a better experience, for sure, and for things you don't hear anywhere else. So fine, great, but that's not the real reason you want to support us on Patreon. What's the real reason, guys?
I mean, to help the show run, to give us money and funding so we can continue to do this into the next year.
Yeah.
I think those are pretty big reasons.
Yeah.
Yeah. We can keep giving you the content that you enjoy, and we can give it to you in a better format as a result of the more cash flow we could get. I don't know. Is that a good pitch?
Yeah. I mean, the idea is that, like, we want to entice you with the benefits.
Yeah.
But we also want to just say, like, you know, this is a... You're donating money to help keep the show going.
Yeah. Yes.
That should be your motivation.
Right.
And part of that is us not having to promise much and deliver way more than we promise.
Yeah.
But part of it is a true thing that when you think about the things in your life that matter to you that you support, you know, if you don't mind the ads, you may hopefully you'll still consider supporting us on Patreon, even if you don't listen to the ad-free feed or any of the bonus content, because you just value the show. Mm-hmm. If it's ever given you an interesting thought, if it's ever started a cool conversation with your game dev compatriots, ever introduced you to a new tool or a new person through an interview we've done, you know, how much is that worth to you?
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be a lot.
Does not.
We think it's worth something.
Yeah, yeah. So you can do all of that at patreon.com/nicegamesclub.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, 2024.
Pew, pew, pew.
There's things happening.
2024. All the bees.
Woo. All the
bees. All the bees waiting to be played out of the various games.
Oh, yeah, I forgot to say I played the bees out of Spirit Island. I meant to. Thank
you. You get credit still for saying it.
Sweet. Yeah, sweet.
So when we talk about the year ahead in our nicest episodes, we break it into two halves.
Mm-hmm.
We say most anticipated. And what we're going to be doing.
Yeah.
That itself is split into resolutions and what we're working on. So just a bit of an update. But let's talk about the games to begin with. Mm-hmm. Ellen, you're on the list first. What are you looking forward to in 2024?
Oh my gosh, there's so many games from this year I still need to play. But what's coming up that's going to be released next year, I definitely want to play Hellblade 2. So that's Senua's Saga.
Okay.
I really liked Senua's Sacrifice. It took me a long time to like work myself up to playing it because it is a game about like psychosis and mental illness. And I've struggled with mental illness in the past. And so I didn't want it to like be a trigger for that kind of feeling, but it wasn't. It was really cathartic and really great. I loved it. So
there's it in a responsible way. You're saying,
yeah, they did. Yeah, they did. And they, you know, they've got a lot of behind the scenes content that explains kind of some of the things that they did to make sure that the game approached those topics in a way that was like sensitive to the experience of people who have gone through some of that. That's the next one's coming out. I don't know anything about it other than it's coming out, and I kind of like to keep it that way. So I'll like subscribe, put it on my wish list, and then when it launches, I'll play it. And that's exciting.
Awesome.
There are a couple cool, really cool looking indies I'm excited for. Dustborn looks really interesting. It's like an adventure game about like crossing a dystopian like future US. I've got the art looks fantastic. Art will get me every time. And then Hyper Light Breaker. So it's a game set in the Hyper Light Drifter like setting, world, universe.
Yeah.
And the art from Hyper Light Drifter is again amazing. So going to be really cool. And I think I listed a few more on my my most anticipated of 2024. But I think the last one that I'll mention here is Little Kitty Big City, because it's got... It's coming out. Yep. It'll come out this year, I think, is the plan. And it does have an amazing name, for one, but also, like, I played Stray, and now I want to continue the trend of playing games when you're a cat. So
yeah.
I want to keep, I want to play these games where you're a cat and compare them. And hopefully it doesn't, I don't want to spoil anything about Stray, but like some parts of Stray were really sad, and this one looks really happy. So,
this one is more Mischief Kitty.
Yeah.
I think.
I
mean, who knows? The premise is so interesting. You're a cat trying to make it home.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think, we have not seen a lot more about its gameplay or story than the initial teaser trailers.
Yeah.
I think the premise is just so strong
that
everybody was excited about it. I think it got a publisher.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm really curious as to like what, I don't really care if it's any good. I think it's, I think already it's enough.
Yeah.
Sometimes a premise is enough.
Yep.
Yeah, it's true.
To be enjoyable, if it's just like a fine, might just be a collect-a-thon 3D platformer, fine. But I'm curious to see what else it has up its sleeve.
Yeah,
because it looks really cool.
Cool. Yeah, I haven't heard of literally. Oh no, I've heard of the new Senua game, but other than that, I haven't heard of any of these games.
Mm-hmm.
So fascinating. Maybe that's why my list is so short.
Yeah,
because I don't know a lot of these games.
You know, I was just taking a peek at Ultros.
Yeah,
and the art is really distinctive. But also that might be something you want to take a peek at for thinking about Sledgehammer Bride.
Oh, really?
Just as a source of inspiration, not like directly.
Yeah.
But you know, you want a sort of unique look, but you haven't really nailed how you want that to be exactly. Mm-hmm. It's a Metroidvania, which is not quite what you planned for that.
Yeah, no, I don't.
But that sort of expressive personality, I think, is something you do want, and so it might be something to take a look at for that reason.
Check it out.
Add it to the vision board, you know.
This is not the aesthetic I want for the game, but it does have a unique aesthetic.
Right. Not a direct sort of.
Yeah, like you were saying.
Yeah.
Take a peek.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. Mark, what are you looking forward to?
Oh, man. Nintendo stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just like every time I'm like, I got to think about the thing about indie games in particular is that they just kind of show up and I play them.
Yep.
They're not part of the hype cycle as much. And so I feel less and less guilty as the years go by of like not putting a bunch of indie games on my list.
Sure.
Or smaller titles. Yeah. I mean, I'm just really busy. There's that too. I just don't feel bad about it anymore. And I'm just like, well, I'll play the Nintendo games and that's fine. I'm happy to play Nintendo games and be the Nintendo game guy.
Yeah.
But Paper Mario Thousand Year Door Remake is coming.
Yeah.
I'm really thrilled about that.
Maybe I'll finally beat the game this next year. I've never beat it. I got really close.
The thing about this game is that it was my return to video games.
Yeah.
When I was in high school, we did GoldenEye, Death Matches, Mario Kart was Nintendo 64. We were the Nintendo 64 house amongst my friends.
Nice.
My parents had like a big rear projection, old, you know, the old big screen TVs before they were flat screens. You know? And one of those. And so it was really fun. And I was really into that. And then I went to college. I just skipped that whole generation of GameCube, Xbox, PlayStation 2.
Right.
And then Dale got her hands on a Wii when they came out, when they were really, really rare. And there weren't a lot of games yet that were really interesting. And so I picked up a bunch of GameCube games, that whole generation.
Yeah.
And one of them was Paper Mario, Thousand Year Door, which I just got because it was cheap and I wanted to try a bunch of games.
Sure.
And play video games in a while. And so I really have a fond place in my heart for that game. I'm not really a huge RPG person.
Yeah.
I do like them, but they're not something I really am attracted to. But it's got Mario on it. You got my attention. That game has a brilliant story. It's very clever. It's very funny. And the design is great. It's paced really well. Like, it's just a fantastic piece of work. And as my re-entry as a video game player, as an adult, it is special to me. And so I'm really glad it's coming out as a remake.
Cool.
Very, very thrilled about that. The other big Nintendo game that was announced in the same Nintendo Direct is Princess Peach Showtime, which is a Peach game. It kind of looks like a beat-em-up. In a weird way.
Yeah.
I don't think it is, but it has that vibe going.
Huh.
The concept is really interesting.
It looks very cute.
Yeah, and the charm of it is irresistible.
Yeah.
The idea is that you're on stage and you go from like set piece to set piece. Kind of narratively, it's like Mario 3 in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like all of this is just pretend.
Yeah.
And I like that approach to it. And of course, Princess Peach starring in a mainline Mario title is exciting on its own. But I think the game looks really interesting. And just the aesthetic and the style of it is really cool. And, you know, the evolution of women characters in games, it took this big pit stop with like tattooed badass.
Yeah.
Right. The only women in games could be tattooed badasses for a while.
Yeah.
And like that was the attempt to sort of like bring women into gaming. It was kind of misguided, right?
Yeah.
Which isn't to say that characters of that ilk are bad. It's just that when that was the one answer people had, it felt a little bit like, are you really actually fixing things?
Yeah.
And Princess Peach as a holdover from a previous stereotype that still has lots of negative ramifications.
Yeah.
They said Princess Peach is exactly as frilly and girly and pink and regal and as ever.
Yeah.
And that will remain part of her identity as we evolve her into the modern world. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, you know, baby steps in a way, but like I think that's a really good, not every franchise takes those steps. Sometimes they're just like, well, this is too important to our history, so we'll just keep it as is, but then add new things
or
whatever. And I think Nintendo, which is not particularly adept at this in general,
right?
It has really done a lot better job with Princess Peach, making her just a real character.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, you can play
and not abandoning what she is, and not apologizing for what she was.
Yeah.
But also no longer engaging in a lot of the things that made her a problematic character.
Right. Well, I mean, actually, that's actually a very fascinating point because, like, I mean, you brought up Super Mario Bros. Wonder earlier.
Yeah.
But there's no one gets captured in Super Mario Bros. Wonder. Except for a castle, I guess, because Bowser takes over the castle.
Yeah.
And
the whole time is like, I got a castle. Ah,
I'm a castle now.
It's as dumb as it sounds. It's great.
It is, actually.
And you, Bowser Jr. is like, my dad's a castle.
Yeah.
He's going to get you.
Everyone's
so silly.
That is great about it. But like, yeah, there's no one captured. Even in, Super Mario 3D World, right? Which is one of the more recent D-ish ones.
Little sprites were in bottles in that game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that one, people got captured in that. Like, yeah. No one gets captured. It's just, no one's taken hostage. No one loses agency.
Yeah.
You can play as Peach in that game, too. So, like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Also, you can play as Daisy. That's what I played as Daisy.
Well, the thing that the real step in Mario Wonder is that you can play as Peach, you can play as Daisy, you can play as Toadette.
Yep.
And if you count the two Toads as one Toad, and you ignore the Yoshis and the Nabbit, which you don't, but basically there's pretty much as many women as men characters in a Mario game. And for a game that will always star Mario and Luigi, that won't change.
Yeah.
That is a real positive step.
Yeah.
There's a great interview with the developer who said that my daughters don't fight over who gets to be Peach, which is, it's not enough to put a woman in your game.
Yeah.
If it's a multiplayer game, the scarcity of women characters is a real thing. It's not just the absence.
Yes.
And I think that's really important. And so they made a real, especially after falling on their face so hard with the new Super Mario Brothers series, by putting in those two Toads.
Yeah.
I mean, that said a very bad thing, right? I make this point in the talk I gave at MDev, and so I kind of want to make that as an episode where I get really into it. But anyway, I'm really excited about Princess Peach.
Yes, sorry.
You know, really on, you know, because it just looks super cool. And I'm glad games, action games, get to, like, be just whatever.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's cool about it, is, like, it's just, like, all the cliches and tropes. I mean, we'll take some or whatever, but we don't need all of them, and we'll just try something fun and new.
Yeah.
And they're not advertising it to kids or girls. They're just like, this is a Princess Peach game.
This is a game. Mm-hmm.
Where she bops people with her parasol.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you just got done with Halo. Have fun with this one. Like, and I think that's a step forward, and I really, really like that.
Yay!
I don't want to give it too much credit, but I really do like that.
Yeah.
And to see it from Nintendo, a very conservative company, is quite nice.
Parasol can be very effective for bopping. Just want to say. So, it probably makes sense.
Yes.
Very realistic in that way.
Yeah, proven in the field.
Yep.
And then the other thing is just more Playdate games. One of the things we do for Twin Cities Playtest is, because we have Playdate hardware here, and we can funnel it into the stream that we do for that event, is I solicit in-development Playdate games every month.
Yeah.
And so I play a bunch of new Playdate games every month as part of that process, so I'm a little spoiled for that. And I just can't wait to play more of them. I'm pretty excited about it. Especially because it's a little bit of looking through the window, because I don't know when I'll finish mine. Steven?
My list is short. Dragon's Dogma 2.
Yep. Maybe again for the third time, you say in the notes.
Yeah, because I put it on the list last year, and I guess I must have put it on the list the year before that.
It didn't have a release date, or was it delayed?
It didn't have a release date. They just announced it. I remember hearing rumors about it 2 years ago, and then they announced it, And now this year, they're actually showing gameplay and stuff. So it's actually happening. And it does seem like it'll be something that'll happen next year. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. They didn't release, they didn't send it, set a release date or anything like that, or even a release window. So we'll see.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I had a hard time coming up with another game to put on the list. Like, I am kind of looking forward to Paper Mario 1000 Year Door remake. Mm-hmm. Like, I've played it already.
Yeah.
And like, it'll be cute if they, you know, if they, and they, they'll remaster the music. I really like music in those games.
Yeah.
In particular. But like, I don't know. I'm not like super hyped for that. So I don't know. I couldn't come up with anything else, which is kind of sad.
Yeah.
Feels kind of sad.
You know, I think every year we have the, we're game developers. We don't play enough games.
Yeah.
We don't follow games enough.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, part of it is like, every year is different. It was a big fall this year. A lot of games squeezed into a holiday release.
That's true.
So a lot of times those games get delayed to March to get out of the way.
Yeah.
Didn't happen this year.
Yeah.
I don't know that it, I guess it didn't need to, mm-hmm. For whatever reason. And so maybe there just aren't as many out there. Because I also feel like I really just pulled from a Nintendo Direct. I feel like I also didn't really get a good sense of what's coming.
But like, I also tend to be a Nintendo person, right? But like, even then, I didn't pick anything from Nintendo stuff. Because, well, maybe part of the reason is because they haven't announced any Kirby games. but also,
that's what they bring you in with, and then while you're there, you might as well try some whatever, some Yoshi or Pikmin here or there.
Yeah. I guess, yeah. Yeah, I didn't even play Pikmin 4 this year. Now I'm thinking about it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't know. I've noticed my interest in AAA games in general has waned dramatically over the past few years.
Yeah.
And then I think I agree with you, Mark, in that like I oftentimes just find out about indie games when they come out.
Mm.
Or I get to them eventually. But I don't tend to anticipate them very heavily early on. So I don't know.
That's interesting.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm like exactly the reverse. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
Here are the list of AAA titles coming out in 2024, and they all the titles sound exactly the same to me.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's just like Schmurkishmur 3, Schmurkishmur 4.
Yeah.
It's like they have the exact same number of syllables. So when I come across something that's like Little Kitty Big City, I'm like, oh, that one rhymes. It's different.
Yeah.
Pay attention. Click on that link.
Yeah. I mean, that's fair. I enjoy a lot of indie games. I just, you know, I don't know.
Yep.
But Dragon's Dogma 2, I'm very excited for that.
Yeah.
Extremely excited. So that makes up for everything.
Yeah, so we'll see.
All right, game dev resolutions.
Yeah.
Ellen, I heard yours is the same as it was last year.
And apparently the year before. Learn Godot more and do less work, make more stuff. I feel like I actually have gotten to do less work, make more stuff. Yep. Like,
okay,
you know, like, I mean, I didn't get into making a dough, but like, did some game jam stuff, and like,
you released a lot of stuff this year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, made a noodle, and I mean that's work, I guess. But like,
that counts.
Work has become more of making stuff.
Yeah.
It's what happens when you get a job you like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not a familiar experience. Sometimes it takes a while to get used to.
Mm-hmm. I've been blessed to like mostly like most of the jobs that I've had, and they've all, you know, recently in the last several years been highly creative, but this is like making games. But in, you know, in addition to that, like we did a lot of work on Dogpile this year, and that was really fun. So I think I just kind of want to keep the same ones, you know, like make stuff and hopefully make it in Godot. So,
yeah.
I said earlier, I've got to make myself a portfolio site, and I'm sticking to that as my next to do.
Uh-huh.
But we'll see.
I mean, the longer it takes for you to become a Godot expert, the longer it'll take me to become one, because I've really decided to wait for you.
Okay.
Which is really healthy for me because I have so many other things.
You do. See, this is not great.
Not be a good idea for me to dive into Godot.
Yeah.
But I do want to.
Because, like, if that gives me an excuse to procrastinate more. It's like,
oh, no.
You can't start because Mark's still so busy. And if you learn, then Mark will have to learn, and you just can't do that to him right now.
Well, wait till we get to mine, because it'll surprise you.
This is like we're both disenablers of each other.
That's fascinating.
We're just both really busy.
Yeah.
You're, well, yeah.
You're busier, but like, yeah.
I think you've talked about the last couple of years about like really wanting to dive into Godot.
Yeah.
But I like where you're at now, which is like you're not going to like punish yourself if you don't get as far on that as you want.
Yeah.
It's just there for you when you've got time for it.
Yes.
You know, I mean, this is what you're saying. You may feel more remorse about this, but it sounds like you've come to terms with the pace that you're on with this.
Yeah, I think. Well, I mean, I think it's just been a lot of other things going on, yeah. And
you didn't waste that time you could have spent, is what you're saying.
Yeah, I'm not really. I'm at the point now where I'm not gonna sleep deprive myself.
Right.
Like to get that stuff done, that doesn't ever end up helping in the long run. Like it just ends up actually just making things slower. You just gotta do it a day at a time and try to stay on top of the most important things. And for me, it's like exercise and sleep and spend time with people. And if I don't have those regularly, then it doesn't matter if I've made a bunch of progress with Godot, because I will crash and burn and forget everything I've learned if I can't maintain a consistent pace. Right. So like, figure out the stuff that you need to be able to do on the regular to be able to, you know, maintain your pace indefinitely and go from there. And that's kind of where I'm at. So right now it's like, I'll work on my portfolio site. And then other than that, I probably won't even touch any like important project stuff until after Christmas, because
yeah,
it's just so many boxes to unpack.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's me. Same as last year. Boring.
I mean, I think it's a good sign.
Yeah.
Right. Because I think flopping around year to year can like mean you get nothing done. Right.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Well, last year I said I wanted to get Dream Tether out, which is not fully in my control. So I don't feel bad about that not happening. Mm-hmm. I wanted to get other things out. And we got Glom out.
Yeah.
But I guess we sort of knew that was happening. We didn't know when it would happen.
Yes.
At that time. I'm just looking at my note. I'm like, what did I mean by that? Other things. What was I talking about? I might have been talking about Playdate stuff. Even then, I was already like, the engine is the project more than the game I was working on. So.
Sure.
But also, on my list was to pitch Dogpile. And I talked about that earlier in the show, but we definitely did that. We put a lot of effort into that. We put a lot of effort into like refining it.
Yep.
We put together that solo mode, which is really good.
Yeah.
We made some final sort of rule adjustments after some playtesting. Mm-hmm. Feels pretty good. Mm-hmm. Players seem to pick it up, and they really engage with it when it's there. But we just don't have the energy to keep pitching it, which is what it needs to be sold.
Yeah.
So multiple people have told me that it's ready for Kickstarter. Like we've done so much work on that game, way more than most developers do at the pitching stage. That like just put it on Kickstarter, it will do well. And it's like you cannot convince me to do a Kickstarter campaign. Yeah. I just can't do it. And so I'm a little bit bummed about that, but I'm not putting it on my resolutions this year. Mm-hmm. As much as I wish it could happen, there just isn't time for it.
Yeah.
And so it's just going to have to simmer in the background, which means probably nothing will get done with it.
Yeah.
Unless one of you two really gets a fire under your butt.
And I mean, I'm not doing a Kickstarter, but maybe I'll help pitch it or something.
I don't mean that necessarily, but like, you know, starts to sort of keep an eye on this progress and look out for opportunities and stuff, which none of us just have time for.
Yeah.
And so I'm letting myself off of the hook for that, even though Dogpile could sell great. I believe in that game.
Yeah,
but
it's good.
I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I'm glad we did the work we did with it last year, and it's in our pocket for whenever.
Yeah.
It's not going to get old.
Yeah.
I feel that way about Robustin too. I do want to do some more playtesting with that, because it's a fun game.
Yeah, it's cool.
I forgot how fun it was and how finished it really was.
Yeah.
It's content and balance is all it needs, which is, you don't need that for a pitch.
Mm-hmm, you don't, know.
So maybe that's what I want to do is to get us to just take another peek at it.
I mean, I'd play it again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's bring it to playtest.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah. Actually, you know what we need to do? We need to make a prototype, a printable prototype. It was during pandemic time. So
yeah.
Perfect tabletop simulator thing. But it's hard to playtest in tabletop simulator.
Yes, it is.
Harder than most games, I think.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay. That seemed like a real big bummer. But my resolutions for this year, I do want to get Dream Set out this year. I'm going to be pressuring the team I think fall seems reasonable. Mm-hmm. But it's not just scope is an interesting issue, but also there's a ton of writing that needs to be done.
Okay.
Yeah.
Part of my work with the prototyping system is to make it so that we can have a game that is complete and can be filled with content.
Yeah.
Which is not how the first game in this series was done. And so I have to do a little bit of convincing the team that that's the right way to do it. and will be ultimately faster, because then we can get a real sense, and then we can grow our scope on content, because we can just fill whatever time is available to us. We can set a deadline for a gold master or whatever, and then spend a couple of months just filling the world and, and fleshing out the sequences and providing the story beats, the details of the story beats we've already decided, because we've done a lot of this narrative design already. It's just so I'm this is just my I know Mike sometimes will listen to an episode of the show.
Oh, really?
So he might, hear this. but he knows all this.
Yeah.
That the how interested I am in getting this thing done. Mm-hmm. It's the game I've worked on professionally the longest, full time for longest now. Because Widget Satchel took 2 years. Metro Nexus was on and off. You know, and the smaller projects were much smaller projects.
Yeah.
This is the game I've worked on professionally for the longest time at 2.5 years now. And I don't want this to be a 5-year project. I really, really don't.
Yeah.
Also, frankly, I can't afford it to be that. Like, you know, I get paid, and I'll get a good cut of the a really good cut of the sales. So I'm in good shape.
Yeah.
Game's got to get done.
Right. You don't get a cut until the game comes.
Yep. Now, the longer I work on it, the more money I will ultimately get from it. But like, I would like to get another maybe higher paying job as soon as possible.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
Because, yeah, because now, I mean, this might be, maybe last year was the year where it was like, you know, it's, there's no more being okay breaking even with my business expenses. There's no more getting a really good tax rebate because I spent more on renting the office and stuff than I, you know, just like riding that line, which I've done as a developer for quite a while now. It's like, now is the time I just got to be more career focused. Mm-hmm. And what, that means to be a little bit more ruthless about this stuff.
Yeah.
But it's not hard. We just got to get this game done.
Yeah.
And then I'll be in good shape to figure out what to do next. And that might be making 3 Playdate games and selling those independently. That might be finishing Metro Nexus and trying to make it sort of an arcade style game. And you know, it might remain continuing to work independently on my own things. It might be putting together a small team. It might be consulting again or freelancing on another project. Mm-hmm. Because that's what I did before Dream Settler, and that was a good habit or a good pattern I was developing.
Yeah.
So that's what I want to do. I want to get Dream Settler out. But in the meantime, I want to work on it because it's super fun to work on.
Yeah.
But the other things I want to do is I need to set up the future of Noble Robot as an office space. We've been here for 2 years. It was 1 year left on the lease. I expect to re-up for years after. But I do have to put some effort into, and I talked about this last year too.
Yeah.
Put some effort into like it's sort of like, you know, filling the desks here and getting it a little bit more lively. Events we've held here, we're still requiring masking. It's still, you know, I've been much slower than other people on sort of on giving up the COVID protections for personal, but also just sort of general reasons.
Sure.
I don't want to be responsible for.
Yeah.
For other people's health in my space.
Yeah.
I'm perfectly comfortable with other people not wearing a mask at a place I go to if I feel I need to. Like, I think that incidence of the world is better now, right? It's it's just that like I'm still have that little extra layer, but when I'm responsible for the space, I put a much higher demands on me, and that is meant. And I talked about this, it was exactly the same thing last year.
Yeah.
Because things haven't changed a lot. They have gotten better this year, but not that much better. Whereas there's this plateau of like, if you don't think about it, it seems fine.
Yeah.
But pandemic not over, y'all.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm still having very much difficulty with being really aggressive about running this as a public space, which has been very frustrating, but I cannot let it go. We'll see in the new year. Data is scarcer. So that's going to be on my mind all year again. We're doing Global Game Jam here again. We'll be doing a lot more public events and stuff. But I got to push past it, or things got to get better. I don't know. We'll see. Last thing on my list is I do want to set up the console SDKs for Dream Settler and even for Metro Nexus. That I want to get back into the workflow of console development because I've been working on Dream Settler for the last 2 years. I haven't had a reason to make a Switch build of it.
Yeah,
we did early on, but that's just, so like things have just. I need to set that environment back up because I'm going to have to start doing it this year as we prepare for release for porting on various consoles. And new consoles might come out.
Yeah.
Like, that might be a thing that happens, or at least announced. So I got to get ready for that sort of stuff. So that's going to matter. And I've got porting work that's in my back pocket and a project that came to me a couple months ago that I do want to. So I was just talking about being focused, but that's part of the balance that I've already struck. So just got to do a little bit of that.
Yeah.
It's just, nothing about is it exciting. Just gotta do the work.
Just gotta do the work. Yeah. Sometimes work's gotta get done.
And I feel, Stephen, you probably have a similar set of goals.
Kinda. Okay. I don't know. Okay, so last year my goal, actually all of my goals I think tend to be vague, so then I can say I did them and it's fine.
Yeah.
Last year's goal was less chaos, more taking control. And that was just due to all of a lot of real life things happening to me last year. That it was out of my control and I could not, you know, I couldn't deal with, or I dealt with it, yeah. I guess, but I didn't, like, it wasn't something I could influence. And so this year I did basically do that. I moved out and moved in my brother's place for a little while and then got a new place, and that's nice. And that's been good. And work has been, well, that's been chaotic, but, you know, it hasn't been terrible. I do feel like I've taken more control over a lot of things that I can. I feel better about a lot of stuff with respect to that. So that feels good. Mm-hmm. But this coming year, I want to look into other engines outside of Unity. And 5 years ago, me,
whatever for.
Yeah. 5 years ago, me is screaming. Why? Because I was pretty adamant about just not having to do any other engines, you know, because Unity is, I don't know, they're doing stuff, I guess. I can't really control what Unity's been on my nerves a little bit for the past couple of years anyways.
Mm-hmm.
Not just like, I don't know. I think it's beneficial for me as a person and in my career to look into other engines so that I can feel more comfortable, I guess, in other spaces with respect to that, mm-hmm. and feel more flexible in case. I have done a little bit of experimentation already. Like, I worked in Game Maker for a little while, but I might look at Godot before y'all do.
Ooh.
Yeah, so.
I would like to see that.
Oh, it's on.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a competition.
Oh, now it's going to happen.
Yeah. This actually might work.
The secret is to make it a competition. That's my strat.
Yeah.
no, but I do want to look at
that. Uh-huh. Weird feelings of competitiveness inside me.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, right. But I just want to look at other engines because I think I'll feel more comfortable. I mean, it'll probably help me feel more comfortable in Unity in general.
Yeah.
But, like, I think it'll be beneficial for Future Club as well because I'm still currently the only programmer.
Right.
It'll be helpful for us to, like, explore other engine opportunities.
Well, not just that, but, like, you know, if and when the engineering team expands,
yes,
you'll be able to work with more people.
Exactly.
If you have, and it doesn't have to even be a lot of experience, mm-hmm. just with some familiarity means you could bring other people on board and then you could work better together.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, this is great because you learning something other than Unity is a multi-year project of Nice Games Club. It's one of the reasons we founded the program to get Steven to use something else.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Uh huh.
And I'm glad it's finally happening.
Going into phase two.
7+ years later.
Phase two. Yeah, the multiverse era. This is it.
Yeah, now we're going to spend the next 7 years trying to get you to comment your code.
It's just not going to happen, right?
Ellen, you didn't talk about your portfolio site.
I should have a portfolio site. I've
been
in this field of work for over a decade. It's so boring. I need to find a way to make it more interesting because it's just like, okay, here's this thing that I like.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I have many years of experience in web design and it doesn't feel any better.
Yeah.
It's pretty rough.
No. I need to I'll recruit my husband and be like, hey, I'm having trouble getting motivated for this. Help me come up with some sort of motivation. And she will probably be like, you just need to do the thing. And I'll be like, no. Like, I don't know, like something. We get to go out and have a burrito or I don't know.
Yeah.
Something. Thing I've got to do. And now apparently I've got to race Steven to learn Godot.
That's on your plate now.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
Me.
But then, yeah. So for work, as far as projects go, you just got to do a portfolio site. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then we'll see how this works out. It's a potential opportunity with a customer.
Okay.
We might be doing an escape room.
Ooh.
So yeah, we'll have to see how that goes. I probably won't be able to talk about it much at all when we do the project, but mm-hmm. I can at least say like, oh, we're doing it or we're not doing it. But right now we might be doing it. Okay. So I'll keep you guys posted.
Exciting.
I interpreted that not as you will tell us you're doing it or you'll tell us you're not doing it. Is that you will tell us you're doing it or not doing it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. That statement will return true.
Right. Yes. Yeah. 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 Hey, that's our show, and that's our year. For show notes and links on today's topics, go to our website, nicegames.club. Visit us on social media at Nice Game Club, where Dale posts about game dev resources and nonsense ZX Spectrum stuff. It's ZX Spectrum, right? Because it's not an American thing. It's not ZX.
That makes sense, actually. Yeah, I guess.
Okay. Reply on the various platforms, mostly Threads these days, or email us, contact@nicegames.club. Nice Games Club is on Patreon. Support the show and get stuff, including ad-free episodes. Sign up at patreon.com/nicegamesclub. If you want to keep things more casual and talk to folks during hiatus about all the cool stuff we're rebroadcasting, just stop by nicegames.club/discord and say hello. Next week, we will be starting a hiatus, so there will be a nice new Nice Replay to listen to. But that's it for this week. So until we start again, remember to
play nice
and make nice.
So Dale is editing this. So Dale, this is a message for you.
True.
Because Steven and I didn't do the what we're working on, we rolled that into resolutions. And Ellen just talked about that.
Yeah.
Can you snip that part out and stick it at the end of her section? Because I think it will slot in quite nicely.
Good idea.
And yeah, I think it'll just
be all structurally sound.
Yeah, but I don't want to.
Right. And then cut this stuff out.
I sort of did.
And you, I think, Ellen, you did mention... the first part a little bit, but it probably is. It's probably not going to have to be a lot of trimming or whatever. You just probably tag it at the end of the
day. So yeah, or you know, worst case scenario, you just slice the whole thing out, and that's fine.
Okay,
like that's cool.
That's
right. Dale, you make the call.
I usually do.
Yeah, love you, Dale. And now you.
What? Love you, Dale.
Yeah, you know how I feel about you.
Steven loves me.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.